Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, has fought all kinds of things in the movies. Earthquakes, criminals, zoo animals, and now he's up against a building.
He's up against a skyscraper, in fact, in a movie that is, appropriately enough, called Skyscraper. It also features Neve Campbell as his wife, a giant crane as a giant crane, and fire as fire. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're defying gravity and saving our families on today's Pop Culture Happy Hour. Here with me and Stephen in the studio is our friend, a movie critic, and our ambassador of punching, Chris Klimek. Hi, Chris.
Hello, everyone.
And in our fourth chair, all the way from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, a librarian, one half of the newsletter Two Bossy Games, and one third of the podcast Appointment Television, Margaret H. Hula Hoop Willison. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, everybody.
I'm so excited, as perhaps you can tell, to have all of you here. Now, I want to start off by saying Skyscraper is, I think, exactly the movie that you expect Skyscraper to be.
Sure.
In all the good and bad ways.
Dwayne Johnson plays Mason Skyscraper, Navy SEAL turned general contractor.
who has to punch a building.
Yeah, it's a roofing job. Yeah. Has to be done in 24 hours.
The premise is he is a security contractor. He brings his family to this skyscraper in Hong Kong to evaluate its incredibly groundbreaking systems and all that stuff. And there are bad guys. And the family gets stuck in the building. And then the building's on fire. And he has to get in the building and rescue the family. And it's basically like that. Now, Chris and I saw this movie together. And I would argue that Chris and I saw this movie in the ideal circumstances, which were a room full of people who quickly decided it was okay to talk back to the movie. Am I correct, Chris?
Yes. The Holmes multiplier was very much in effect for this movie. You know, stuff that I might not necessarily hang with all the way to the end on Encore Action at 2 a.m. If I am sitting next to you,
yeah,
I'm all the way there, vocally, unequivocally.
Yeah. As I said on Twitter, an infrequently mapped part of my personality is the part that's really fun to watch movies like this with.
Sure.
Or Fast and the Furious movies, which Chris doesn't like, but still will go to with me because it's...
Because of the Holmes multiplier.
Only, right.
It's our thing.
And only under those circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's our thing. Thompson, what'd you think?
Well, I would apply another Holmes metric, which would be the Holmes Index, which is a creation of Linda that determines how desirable a movie is to see in the theater based on how hot it is outside. So, for example, as I recall, when you created the Holmes Index, the movie Meet Dave with Eddie Murphy as like multiple Eddie Murphys needed to be 130 degrees outside.
Before I would see it in a theater.
Before you would see it in a theater. Yeah. This is what people think of when they think of summer movies, right? Mm-hmm. There's an element of self-seriousness that has crept into a lot of big summer blockbusters. This does not have that. This is a boilerplate, two-star...
Boilerplate, Stephen Thompson, NPR.
Yeah, I mean, it is basically, and The Rock has described it as such, it is a cross between Die Hard and Towering Inferno with a skosh of The Fugitive. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it is as good as Die Hard. Very, very few movies are.
This is a controversial opinion.
A controversial opinion.
Or The Fugitive.
Or The Fugitive.
Or The Towering Inferno.
Yeah, I mean, The Fugitive was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Right, right. So it
really?
Is not very good. It's exactly what you think it's going to be. The character's name is Will Sawyer.
Uh-huh.
And might as well be named like Noble Man.
Well, and I think we will agree that he really should have a business card. And what it should say on it is not Will Sawyer, security expert. It is Will Sawyer, action dad. Because Will Sawyer is the name of an action dad who has two adorable kids and a very nice and capable and tough wife who also used to be in the Navy. So they give her some tough skills.
Which I actually appreciate that she is there for more purposes than to be rescued.
Yeah.
I like to think of myself as basically action dad minus the ability to cope with heights or the upper body strength.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, Margaret, I have been very much enjoying listening to you giggle all through the beginning of this conversation. So tell me how you felt about Skyscraper.
I would say I agree with a lot of what Stephen says, but I think the movie is better in certain important spaces than it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ultimately, you're going to see an action movie about The Rock fighting a skyscraper. You know what you're getting into. It doesn't have to have a wife who has a role that is bigger than just being saved, right? It doesn't have to have moments quite as well crafted where you know you're rooting for him. It doesn't have to have him be not entirely invulnerable.
Right.
He's missing the lower part of his leg from the traumatic establishing incident in the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
And all of that stuff is done really well and I think adds enormously to the movie being an enjoyable waste of time, right, rather than just a plain old waste of time.
Yeah. I read some interesting stuff about the fact that he has a prosthetic on his leg. And, you know, in a lot of these conversations we talk about, you could have had an actor who has a prosthetic leg. But I think this is a case where the alternative was probably not another actor with a prosthetic leg. It was probably the alternative was The Rock without this aspect
with
to
three
the character.
Legs. And they thought he would be more vulnerable if he only had two, but one of them was artificial.
With that caveat, I like the way that they use that aspect of the character in the movie because it is almost like what I said in the review is it functions a little bit like Bruce Willis winding up in bare feet in Die Hard, which is they very carefully set up a reason for him to be in bare feet, which is just another thing he has to deal with, but it's nothing he can't handle. It's just another thing you get to see him deal with. And I like the fact that they're not afraid to do things with the prosthetic that are kind of witty in a way.
Sure.
It ends up being almost like a superpower more than a disadvantage.
Or things where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they did that. And I liked that aspect of it. And I agree with you that it helps a movie like this for the guy not to just be a body that you can't imagine being vulnerable to anything.
Right. Sure.
And if you're going to posit that Pablo Schreiber could fight The Rock, you have to figure out a way to give Pablo Schreiber some options. You know, which they do.
Right.
It feels so dumb to sit here and like nitpick Skyscraper.
No.
But it's impossible
it's
not
fun
to.
What do you think you're
saying about my entire existence, Stephen?
I say this as a man who is about to nitpick Skyscraper. There are enough echoes of Die Hard in this movie, including a villain who feels kind of Hans Gruber-esque.
Does he?
In a sense.
I thought he didn't feel like anything. It was like villain TK.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Villain TK.
That's what I'm saying is it has superficial echoes of Die Hard that made me wish.
Such as it being in a building.
And
no, there are a lot of echoes of Die Hard, I think.
And that made me wish for a script that kind of crackled a little bit more.
Of course, I do think
there are some very nice decisions along the way. The Rock, if you've ever read an interview with The Rock loves disabled veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he is able to play a disabled vet who, you know, overcomes disability, that stuff is nice, but the actual dialogue, it just kind of sits there.
There is one line in this movie that is not exposition.
Right. Oh.
And it is, if you can't fix it with duct tape, you're not using enough duct tape. Every other line.
Right, well, every line.
That one's product placement.
Yes. Yeah. Right. I mean, the first half hour of this movie is basically a visit to the Museum of Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
I mean, everything in this movie happens for exactly the reason you think it's happening.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Once we established, I'm never the first person to talk in a movie, but once everyone is talking in the movie, I did have a lot of fun leaning over to Chris and occasionally saying, so when do we think this is going to happen? And when do we think this is going to happen? And we were right about basically all of them. I gave a few little cheers during the movie. Jungle, jungle. You wouldn't think there'd be jungle in a skyscraper movie, but you would be wrong.
Right, because we have to put Jumanji in this movie. There is a very channel-flipping quality to this movie.
There is.
Like, I mean, at 103 minutes, this is still, I think, a little bit shaggy. It's a shaggy 103.
But still.
Like, I would argue it would be stronger without the prologue. You know, he could just be a veteran who lost a leg.
Sure.
So I have a question.
Is it about Skyscraper?
It's about Skyscraper. So you know the thing about the Uncanny Valley where you can't render realistic human faces using animation. It's just something they haven't quite figured out. I am here to posit that that is also true of Flames.
Oh, interesting. Mm.
I felt like I was watching a lot of CGI Flames in this movie.
They have figured out water. Like, water used to be the
water
thing that
they've
really struggled with, and they have got that down. But yeah, I don't know. I think generally the green screen in this movie is like Weather Channel level. I mean, at no point did I believe that Dwayne Johnson was maybe 8 feet off the ground.
Wait.
This is not Tom Cruise with an IMAX camera strapped to his butt.
You didn't find this movie believable?
I actually think that it's kind of a feature that many elements of the movie are not that believably terrifying. right? Because I know at the end of the movie, everybody I like is going to be fine. Like, maybe the businessman is going to die heroically, but like, The Rock is going to be fine. Mrs. The Rock is going to be fine. Rocklets 1 and 2, they're going to be fine.
The pebbles.
And I think that that's good. And I think that that ties into some of the stuff about stakes that this movie, I think, is doing right and wrong. So I think one of the ways that it is good to have a hero who is not invulnerable is that it gives you more granular stakes in the action sequences. So they don't just have to be exploded to more and more ridiculous heights, although yes, that certainly does happen here. But you're still kept in a more controlled range than it's just like, he's jumping into a bomb, right? Mm-hmm. It's like he's climbing along the side of a building to reach a backup generator. I don't need plot Muppets in a movie like this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need there to be kids who might die for there to be stakes. Right. That ends up being more stressful than fun for me. Like, I just would rather never see, like, a gun held up to the side of, like, an adorable curly-haired girl child.
Right. I hear that. What were you thinking?
Oh, I was just going to say, in terms of suspension of disbelief, I mean, there are several segments in this movie that really made me pine for Mythbusters. There are several duct tape adjacent stunts where I just wanted like actual picture in picture of the Mythbusters guys just shaking their heads.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody saw that meme, right? As soon as the poster came out, like plotting out the trajectory from which he would plummet like a dump truck full of ambles if he really jumped off the crane like that distance from the building.
It is no more realistic in the movie.
You know, that is the central stunt of this movie. It's on the poster. It's in the trailer, that leap off the crane. So you have to shoot it in a way that sells it, right? Now, this movie was directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber of Dodgeball, right? And Central Intelligence, a comedy with Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson that I liked. I think I liked it more than this movie. And I think what I'm coming around to is I like him more in comedies than in a like a straight up traditional action flick, you know? Yeah. I think that plays to his strengths a little more.
All right. Well, I know that not as many people saw Skyscraper this weekend as the studio was hoping, but I think some of you saw Skyscraper or will see Skyscraper. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it will be time to talk about what is making us happy this week. So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Lisa, the mattress with over 11,000 five-star reviews and a mission to end bedlessness in America. The Lisa mattress was designed to provide support and pressure relief to every body type and sleep style for a deeper night's sleep. Lisa plants a tree for every order and donates a mattress for every 10 sold. Get $125 off, free shipping, and 100 nights to try the Lisa mattress. Go to leesa.com/NPR. Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Wix.com, a web platform for creating your own professional website. With Wix, whether it's your first time creating a website or you're a longtime pro, you can do it yourself. Choose from hundreds of stunning templates or start from scratch with drag-and-drop technology and powerful web features. Join over 125 million people already using Wix to create their own websites. Go to Wix.com to create yours today. So what will you create?
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
I've been playing more video games with my kid, as I promised to do in the Resolutions and Predictions show. And he got me into a game called Celeste that I've really been enjoying for the Nintendo Switch. In Celeste, you play Madeline, who is an anxious and depressed girl who decides she has to climb Celeste Mountain. To do that, she has to go through a million little levels that are just challenges. And it is what in the biz they call a 2D platformer. It is actually fairly primitively animated. Anyone who has played a late stage Mario game will kind of understand the basics of the challenges involved. It is a weirdly difficult game if you're me, but it is also a weirdly poignant game. It has all this story around these challenges about anxiety and depression, and at various points in the game, the main character is actually chased by the version of herself that doubts everything she does, and there's a real element of kindness and humaneness to this game that is also just about trying to complete little puzzle after little puzzle after little puzzle. And you can die an infinite number of times. And I did.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I know, Linda, you've been dabbling in the Switch more and more if you've gotten into Celeste.
Haven't played it yet.
It's not very expensive. It's like $20. Mm-hmm. And some will find it maddening. Mm-hmm. But it's also really rewarding and strangely sweet. So Celeste for the Nintendo Switch came out earlier this year.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Chris Klimek, what is making you happy this week?
I am extremely happy about the bizarre but joyful coincidence of having Sorry to Bother You and Blindspotting out in theaters at the same time. These are both political movies by Oakland-based hip-hop artists. I mean, you know, multidimensional artists, obviously Boots Riley from The Coup and Daveed Diggs of Hamilton and Black-ish, many other things. Music is not all they do, both getting into feature films. And the one that I happened to see yesterday is Blindspotting. This is a film that is co-written by Daveed Diggs and Rafael Casal. They went to high school together, have known each other since then. They are the producers and stars of this film as well. Daveed Diggs plays an ex-con who is in the final 3 days of his probation, and he witnesses a police shooting. And that is all I want to say about the plot. But, you know, as much of a timely hook as that setup sounds like, the genius of this film is all in the execution, the way that it depicts PTSD, the way that it depicts racial problems and toxic masculinity and all these things that, you know, as I'm hearing myself talk about it, I feel like, oh, this is going to be a lecture movie. This is going to be a lesson. This is a completely absorbing, brilliantly made film. It is 95 minutes long. And I was shocked to see that it was that short when it was over, because it feels like a full emotional meal. Not because I was bored, not because I was shifting my seat, but just because I felt like I had gone on a journey with these characters. So Blindspotting is getting a limited rollout on July 20th. So if you live in Chicago, New York, LA, Oakland, or Washington, D.C., make sure you buy a ticket for this movie so that it'll get a wider release. The film is Blindspotting, but also go see Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You. Both these movies are great.
Thank you very much, Chris Klimek. Margaret H. Hula Hoop Willison, what is making you happy this week?
What is making me happy this week is a terrific sense of personal accomplishment, because I have gotten my first ever byline for NPR Music, which is like a huge deal for me, because I've been listening to your programming at NPR Music, Stephen, since well before Pop Culture Happy Hour even existed. And I got to participate in one of my favorite projects that you guys do, the Rosé Wave Project, which basically is about loving music that is purely delightful, even though society would tell you to ignore it because its primary goal is to be fun and it is femme identified. And I got to combine that with another passion of mine, because I was told to create a romance novel themed playlist. So I got to write a little bit about romance novels and why they are the perfect thing to read in the summer, and I got to make a playlist that mirrors the arc of a romance novel in song, and it was incredibly fun. It is called Bed of Roses, a title I came up with myself, of which I am justifiably proud.
Amazing. Bless your heart, Margaret H. Willison.
So Bed of Roses, a playlist from Margaret H. Willison, available through NPR Music. All right. Thank you so much, Margaret. What is making me happy this week? A couple of years ago, our buddy Glenn Weldon, sitting out of the Skyscraper episode, shockingly enough.
He's afraid of heights.
Yeah. Our buddy Glenn Weldon recommended the podcast Pitch, and that is how I met, actually, the guys who make Pitch, which at the time was an independent podcast. They've now put out their new season through Audible. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can get it. If you have an Audible subscription, you can get it, or you can buy it. And it's about music. It is a podcast full of stories about music. And in the previous incarnation, they did all the stories, Alex Kappelman and Whitney Jones, they did all the stories themselves. In this incarnation, they have brought in a lot of other voices and other people to do stories, which I think is really smart and a really good way to run your podcast. It's just a bunch of different stories about the way that music affects people. The one that I would highlight is actually Alex's story, which is about It's called Recognition, and it's about whether cats like music, which sounds really funny, but it tells the whole story of a guy who got into making music for cats, but it was not because he wanted to make music for cats. It was because he thought under...
He made a deal with a demon, and he lost.
It was because he felt that if you could understand how music affects animals, you would be able to understand how music affects humans, because you'd have something to sort of compare it to. If you could tell the differences between what humans like and what cats like, that would tell you what humans like about music. And the story kind of takes off from there. And as someone who currently tries to settle down my dog by making my Alexa play ocean sounds for him to fall asleep, I was fascinated by this idea of what calms down animals. You can find it, again, through Audible, through Amazon Prime, and it's called Pitch. And their new season is up, so that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can find Chris at CT Klimek and Margaret at Mrs. Friday Next. You can find our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy, our producer Vincent Accavino at V Accavino, and our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katzeff at Mike Katzeff. Mike's band Hello Come In provides our in and out music that you are bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for listening. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see you right back here next week.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, and on our latest episode of How I Built This, how Steve Madden took high-end shoe designs, gave them low-end prices, and turned his name into a $3 billion shoe company. You can find How I Built This on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.